I'm Christopher Springman, and you're listening to Body Language on Radio MD. The ACA, the Affordable Care Act, sometimes known as Obamacare, is off and running, but there's a provision, hey, you aren't going to find it in the law. That is Medicare reimbursement for physicians having a voluntary conversation with patients about advanced directive, essentially end-of-life counseling. Seems like a pretty good idea, doesn't it, since everyone dies? And how you die is the essence of what is called a good death. Our next guest has written a book on the subject, and I will tell you much, much more. Her name is Katie Butler. She's the author of Knock, Knock, Knockin'. No. Just One Knocking on Heaven's Door. The Path to a Better Way of Death. Katie, welcome to Body Language.
Thank you, Christopher. Good to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you on the air. For many people who have read this book, who have recommended this book, it is a painful sort of re-experience, reenactment of what they endured as they watched their parents deteriorate and finally die. And so often those people have said, and I said the same thing, there has got to be a better way to depart this earth.
I think one of the main ingredients of a good death is a sense of choice. And we are robbing people of that sense of choice, partly because people are afraid to face death, and so if you don't face it, you can't really prepare for it, and partly because we have a medical system that puts a premium on maximum longevity and maximum treatment. And people sometimes feel they just have to defer to the doctor and keep doing very, very painful treatments that are giving them maybe a week, maybe an extra month of life, maybe not even that.
Well, those are also probably the most expensive weeks or months of their life.
Yeah.
And very often, and there are whole communities of widows in Florida who are destitute because all of their savings and retirement funds were spent on medical procedures that may or may not have prolonged the life of their husband, or perhaps just simply ruined the quality of life while trying to increase longevity. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. A quarter of people now spend everything they have, including the values of their houses.
Oh, the house is gone, definitely.
Yeah. In the last 5 years of life. And it used to be that those bequests from grandparents were part of what kept the middle class in the middle class. It's absolutely tragic, and I keep saying, for what? For what are we doing this? Why? How did this behemoth get set in motion and become so completely out of control that people like you feel, frankly, victimized by how the end of life goes down?
Your mother at age 77 became one of 29 million unpaid, politically powerless, and culturally invisible family caregivers, and I might add, primarily young women, 9% of the U.S. population, what has been described as the largest unpaid workforce in the United States.
Wow.
She certainly took the words, till death do we part, seriously, but that entire process, and you can elaborate on this, literally shortened her life. Why was that?
There's research that shows that the ends of your DNA, called your telomeres, shorten as you age, and that people who are caring for people with dementia, they see a literal shortening of their telomeres. In other words, they age more rapidly than they would age if they were not in these incredibly stressful conditions. There's also research showing that the heart calcifies literally under this kind of stress. We give a lot of spiritual lip service to caregivers. We talk about what saints they are, but we give them very little practical or government support. Some countries in Europe pay home caregivers, family caregivers, and even pay into their pension funds to make up for the money that they're losing by not being in the workforce, and we don't do that in the U.S.
Why do healthcare professionals not channel families and individuals into hospice and palliative care? Is it a fear of failure on the part of especially surgeons or doctors that, you know, we've got to fight the good fight? Why isn't the need for hospice and palliative care recognized earlier? And this, by the way, is one of the drumbeats of an organization called the National Hospice and Palliative Care. They are continually suggesting to not only medical professionals, but families and individuals to seek hospice and palliative care earlier to not only improve their quality of life, but quantity and longevity. I know it's hard to believe, but
there are multiple factors that create this situation. Most doctors get almost no training in palliative care in hospice to begin with, so they're in some ways ignorant and suspicious of it. They very naturally don't want to, quote, abandon their patients to another system.
It's very difficult for them to do what has been called the handoff, to basically say, well, I'm very sorry, but any further invasive procedures are really futile, so we should explore other alternatives. It's very difficult for people to do that.
Exactly. And then I think, as you mentioned, there's a feeling of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, doctors tend to be extremely over-optimistic about how long someone is going to live. And it's partly because they become attached to their patients, and they want them to
live. Yes, but this is also part of the medical numbers game. Doctor, how long am I going to live?
And no doctor can tell you. No doctor can tell you, but there
is. And no doctor should tell you, by the way.
Yeah, although I think, some people say, the doctor can say something like, well, I've seen people with your condition live as long as a year and a half and as short as 2 months, you know? You can give people ranges like that, but you can't predict how long someone's going to live or die. But we do know from the research that doctors keep being overly optimistic. And I think family members do, too. So the result, unfortunately, is that people get put through the ringer of very, very invasive and painful procedures, and then at the last minute, the doctor, the oncologist, will dump that patient on hospice for, let's say, the last 3 days of life. It's very, very unfortunate because hospice is a six-month benefit, and it can help the whole family not only prepare for death, but also to have a good quality of life until death comes.
And you can learn more about the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization at their extremely informative website, and you can even download your state-specific advanced directive form at www.caringinfo.org. That's C-A-R-I-N-G info, caringinfo.org. Our guest is Katie Butler, author of Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Path to a Better Way of Death, a good death, and in many cases, a slow death. I can only imagine, Katie, and I know after your original article appeared in 2010, that you've received a lot of mail, but
every day I get mail from people, and they fall into several categories. One is mail from doctors who say something along the lines of, I too am deeply disturbed by what is going on in medicine. I have one here from a critical care doctor in Colorado.
And what is going on?
He says, as a critical care physician, I see what you have described far too often, and sadly your book only scratches the surface. I have seen patients 90-plus getting multiple coronary stents, demented patients being put on dialysis, another highly reimbursed and life-prolonging procedure, cancer patients getting more and more chemo, even as they are on their last breath, another field with huge industry ties and incentives to offer poorly studied therapies. So these are the letters I get. These are the letters I get. Unfortunately, a lot of us lose touch with our gut and with our core values, and we defer in situations where the most loving thing to do is to say, enough, do not do this.
And in touch with her core values and certainly her gut is author Katie Butler. The book is Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Path to a Better Way of Death. Katie, thank you so much for joining us today on Body Language on Radio MD. I'm Christopher Springman, and for all of you, stay well.